Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there, if you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Hello, bastards and wenches, and welcome to the first edition of our Anime Boston 2019 interview specials. Now, before we begin, I want to give a very special thank you to the entire staff and crew of Anime Boston. Each year, they work their butts off to make sure practically every Easter weekend, you know, when it falls on Easter weekend, is filled with fun, excitement, and as little drama as possible. I especially would like to give a very big thank you to Chris O'Connell over at Guest Relations for helping to set these interviews up that you'll be hearing over the next couple of weeks. A lot of work has to be done to make sure each and every guest is nice and comfortable, so he and his crew deserve a lot of credit for making sure they're all good and enjoying themselves at the convention. After all, it's good word of mouth from these other guests that help to make sure Anime Boston keeps pulling in some great people to come to AB. With all that out of the way, let's get things rolling. On today's episode, you will be hearing a special interview with Yuri Lowenthal. Yuri's work includes such iconic characters as Sasuke Uchiha in the Naruto series, Spider-Man in the recent Insomniac Games adaptation of the beloved web-slinger, Suzuka in Code Geass, and Matt Miller in Saints Row. B3 was joined by Toonami Faithful, Anime Herald, Sci-Fi Wire, The Geekly Grind, Raider Times, and Game Press for this interview. So, let's awaken our Sharingan and dive into this Anime Boston 2019 interview special with Yuri Lowenthal.
Once upon a time on a funky sunny island, only 50 years from when we saw the world explode, there lived a young lad having fun and causing trouble. Along came a dude who had a massive sword that glowed. Once upon a time when the world was getting nasty, only 50 years from when we heard the radio boom, there lived a young lad who found a girl with pump and blasters.
Yes, yes, go right ahead.
This is your mattress, right? Mattress with Toonami Faithful.
Awesome.
Nice to have you.
Thank you.
I kind of wanted to ask, since we haven't been able to talk with you before, at least recently, the legacy of the block on Adult Swim now and how it's brought anime to the U.S. and how much it means to you, the fact that thanks to this block, anime has been not necessarily mainstream, but just more popular, and since you've been obviously on the block many times.
Yeah.
How it feels to you hearing that, like, Toonami has this lasting legacy?
I think that Toonami was a forerunner in, you know, bringing it to the masses, as it were. You know, we always said, maybe even, you know, me growing up, I had to dig for my anime. You know, to find it in the States, I had to sometimes literally dig through bins at, you know, comic conventions. But, Toonami has been a bastion for that. I have to thank Steve Bloom for quite, you know, the attention. And the, I mean, he is truly a... he is truly the Toonami Faithful. Like, he is the Lord God of, you know, bringing people to the channel. And, he's the Lord God of a lot of things, let's be honest. But, I think Toonami has been, I mean, for the longest time, it was, you know, a lot of the stuff that you wouldn't even see normally. I mean, you know, like the late night stuff, you know, like, you know, catching like Big O, like, in, you know, in the middle of the night was a game changer for me. and stuff like that. But yeah, I would wholeheartedly agree that that Toonami has been there for. I mean, you know, all of us nerds, you know, always find a place to get it. But this, I think, has really broadened the access to it. So I'm proud to be a part of that in whatever, you know, sort of small way that, you know, whatever small contribution I've made. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hello, my name is Maren Pappos.
Hi, Maren.
And I'm representing Watertown High School and I'm from the Reader Times.
Excellent.
And I'd like to ask you about sort of the old gen voice actors from like the early 2000s and the late 90s. And I've noticed that there's like a big shift going on, and that a lot of these old gen VAs are moving from anime to video games or to like mainstream cartoons. So what is your opinion on that? Like, what do you think that's happening?
I think primarily it is a it's a financial thing, to be honest. I know I can, I'll speak for myself before I speak for anyone else, because I don't know everybody's story. But anime dubbing anime does not pay very well. I'll be brutally honest. A lot of people say, "Hey, I want to, you know, this. I want to go out to LA and I want to dub anime for a living." And I'm like, "You can come out and dub anime, but it won't be for a living. Like, you won't be able to make a living doing just that." It was where I got my start, and you know, I was a big old anime nerd before you know I even got started doing this business. And I will always, you know, I will always want to stay in it. But the it didn't work out for me to just dub anime and provide for my family. so you know, I mean, they're as you know, as an actor, I audition for a lot of different things. I audition for commercial stuff and video games. I mean, you know, video games have become, you know, they've exploded since I started. And animation, you know, the original animation that we record in Los Angeles offers residuals, you know, and things like that. Residual payments when they, you know, air over and over. If they're, you know, running, you know, rerunning the show, I could still get, you know, paid on that. So if those opportunities are open, I want to take those too. So that, again, so I can support my family. Again, just speaking for myself, that might not necessarily be everybody's decision. But I will always try to keep my hand in the game because I love the community so much and I love the art of it so much. But I have participated in fewer dubs just because I haven't had time. That stuff takes a lot of time, too. You know, dubbing a show is a huge commitment depending on you know, your role in it. And there's sometimes when I've agreed to do it because I knew that it was actually a small, they're like, "Hey, Yuri, it's just a few episodes." I'm like, "Great. I know I can manage that. Let's get in and do that." So for me, that has definitely been a factor. I've been fighting on the sidelines with a lot of other people to try to get better rates established for actors, you know, who dub. And that takes a lot of work because there's less money in the just because you know of piracy and you know being able to watch a lot of stuff for free on the internet. Japanese production companies have ramped down their production because they can't count on English dubs being sold and making money on that. So rates have been sort of dropping, and a lot of you know companies have been going non-union. We don't need to get into the whole union non-union thing, but some jobs are union, some jobs are not, So it's a struggle, but I think personally I think dubbing is a harder skill than just doing original animation, or you know often you know video games. I mean they're all different skills, and not to take away from you know, the people who only do that, but I think dubbing is hard, and I have great respect for the actors who do it, and I wish that they were paid commensurate you know to that to the skill. So I'll always be fighting for that. But thank you for that. That's a great question.
Hi. I'm Alex Nutting from the Geekly Grind. Mm-hmm. What do you find is the major difference between working on Western animation versus Japanese animation?
The difference between Western and Japanese animation, I mean, they're so much different. It's why I fell in love with anime when I was a kid. Even before I knew it was called anime, I was like, what is this weird, you know, subset of cartoons that I'm attracted to? And it's because I mean, there are many. Obviously, you know, you're dealing with a lot of cultural differences. I feel that Japanese animation is not afraid to shy away from difficult topics. And whereas I would say Western animation, on a whole, you know, you get there obviously, and I think more and more Western animation has taken a cue from it's a big circle. At first, you know, anime was influenced by Western animation. I think Western animation is now being influenced by anime, and it's come full circle. You look at a lot of the shows now, and they're edgier and weirder, and I don't think that could have happened without Late Night Toonami and you know, Adult Swim, and you know, the weirdest of the weird anime, which is my favorite of, you know, anime. So yeah, if I had to pick sort of a thing that stood out besides the, you know, the myriad cultural, you know, things that come up because it's Japanese versus Western or American, I would just say they're not afraid to deal with very adult topics and tough emotions and things like that in anime that, for whatever reason, in Western animation we're afraid of, or we have those, you know, strict morals, you know, no sex but lots of violence, you know, violence is okay but, you know, boobies aren't, you know, or whatever. I think that's a big difference, and probably, again, one of the reasons I was attracted to anime early on in my life. I craved being not talked down to, you know, being spoken to like an adult, and that happens a lot. And I mean, who hasn't watched Grave of the Fireflies and just cried your eyes out and been scarred for life? No, you never saw a movie like that. And I mean, Watership Down also messed me up as a kid. But I'm saying, you know, that's, I'm just repeating myself at this point. I love anime. I think this is how I can, yeah, dumb that down. Thank you.
Hello. Hi. My name is Evan Borgo. I am from Boston Dasher Brigade and the host of the Excellent. No Borders, No Race J-Pop and Alternative Podcast Show.
Excellent.
So, the very first time I started to notice your talent as a voice actor was on a classic Toonami show known as Raid Master and the role of Haru Glory.
That was one of my first.
So, my question is, with that being one of your very first, how would that role prepare you for the many iconic Shonen characters that you would go on to play throughout your career?
It was a flashpoint for me. I had only had a sizable role on one other show before that, and this was, you know, the lead role. I would say he formed or I found my, you know, either he formed, you know, who my heroes were going to be from that point on, or I finally found where my heart lay in him. Yeah, Haru is. And that show, you know, I thought it was going to be big, and then they ended up not even releasing, you know, most of the episodes. I don't know if I should say this or not, but I have somebody got me a bunch of old like VHS masters of the episodes that never got released, and I've sort of been hoarding them. Like I don't know what to do. You know, I mean, I have a VHS player, and I still play VHS tapes because I'm old, but it. Yeah, like, I don't know what to do with, like, I feel somehow like I'm sitting on a, I mean, have they finally ever, has there been any release
just
on,
the first 12
just the first 12?
Like,
and then Tokyo Pop had, like, they were releasing the DVD, but it was only, like, the first 12, right?
Yeah. Thought the discotheque downstairs.
Yeah, okay. Okay, fair enough. I think it might. Wow, except I've just outed myself. if I had just somehow leaked those tapes, it wouldn't. To hell with it. Let me see if I can dig them up and see who I can hand them off to. I'd rather that people could see them than not. And I see no good reason for that not to have. You know, some of my favorite shows have been, you know, the timing has been wrong or, you know, whatever. Financial things that we don't know, you know, we're not privy to that information as to why something gets released or not released or why it gets buried. I felt that way about Legion of Superheroes on the early morning Warner Brothers Kids block, Saturday morning WB Kids, sort of got buried forever too, and I thought it was one of the greatest shows. That's still one of my favorite memories. Some of my favorite shows are the ones that get buried. What does that say about me or the shows that I like? I don't know. Yeah, I guess I let the cat out of the bag on that one. There's no putting that one back, and I'll have to see if I can find those tapes.
Hi, I'm Samantha from Anime Herald.
Hi, Samantha.
And you've worked on all levels of industry as an actor, a director, and even now as co-owner of a production company with Monkey King Productions.
Yep.
Given this perspective, where do you see the industry today, and what avenues do you see publishers turning to for growth in the future?
I have found that at first it was just to keep my sanity. Me and my wife Tara, who formed the production company together. As actors, you have very little agency over your career unless you become super famous. You audition for a lot of things and you take the things that you get that you're not morally opposed to. Obviously, if you have morals as an, it's hard to have morals as an actor. The only way we found that we could, that would help us sleep at night and that would help us, you know, keep our hearts full, was to create our own projects. And so that's why we formed the production company originally. Since then, the world has changed, and I have found that the actors that I see succeeding, the actors that I see happy, are actors who don't just go to auditions and hope that their career is going to blow up. They have to create their own content. And I tell that to people who are like, hey, I want to act. I'm like, great, here's what you can do. Start making your own series, you know, go, you know, put them on YouTube. Get together, find that group of friends that you love to, that you, you know, you're all on the same page with, and make things. Because for the most part, actors' salaries are shrinking because of the economy of the internet, and then just the entertainment economy overall. And you have to find a way, if you want to survive in that profession, you have to own more than just that paycheck on that job. You want to create content that then people can license, or then you can, you know, create your own show. But you can't think of it as a oh, for money I'll do this. It always has to be for love I'll do this, and I hope that someday then, you know, the passion pays off. It happens all the time. Tara and I still have yet to. We've created a lot of different content, web series and films, and we still have never made a dime off of the things that we've created. We just haven't found the way. We're really good at making things and very bad at monetizing those things. But it has kept our hearts full. But look at Critical Role. You know, they did that out of love, and they, you know, they found their audience. I mean, it happens all the time. Without that, you know, they'd still be, and, you know, still are, you know, working actors, but they'd just be actors. Just, if they didn't have that, you gotta make that. Everybody's gotta, you know, and I find it difficult to give advice because, especially in this industry, there's no A plus B equals C formula, so everybody's gonna have a different path. So I try not to give advice, but I have told people what I see works. And that's make stuff. Don't wait around for somebody, because as an actor, we're mostly waiting around for somebody to say, yes, you can do this thing. And we have to stop and just start making our own stuff. You can still work on other people's stuff. I work on everybody's stuff. But you got to make your own stuff. If you're passionate about storytelling. I mean, some people are like, I just want to show up and do the thing. I'm like, great. If that works, I see no reason to stop doing that. But that was where we had to go with it. And I think that's a trend. You look at actors who are, you know, whether it's what's the musical sitcom, My Ex-Girlfriend, or
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Thank you. She created that show. You look at people like Felicia Day. She created that career. She was an actor who was working, but it didn't blow up until she started making stuff for her own with the Guild and, you know, all of what she's done. I don't know if you know Chris Niosi. He has a show called Tome, he created that show. He didn't wait for... And it's got a huge following. And, it's, you know, he loved anime, and he was learned to, you know, animate stuff, and he made his own show. He didn't wait for Cartoon Network to, you know, to come, or Nickelodeon to come. And it keeps you moving, and it keeps your soul full. So yeah, I see that as a trend. I don't know if that answered your question. I hope that was at least in part answer your question. Do you feel that?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Sam.
Dana from Sidewire.
Awesome.
I wanted you to talk a little bit about the Spider-Man game.
Yeah.
I loved playing through it. It was awesome. Could you just tell me a little bit about if that's opened any doors, if you've got see any future with that, or stuff with them in the future?
Do you work with Adam? Are you in New York? Are you like local Sci-Fi Wire?
Yeah,
or is it okay? I know some of the guys in New York, so I had to ask. We all like did grew up doing theater together.
Oh, awesome.
I will talk till I'm blue in the till I'm red and blue in the face about the Spider-Man game because it was a dream come true, as a kid growing up playing or reading comic books and dressing as Spider-Man. That this game had. It was like a perfect storm. Like it had the good writing and it had, you know, good gameplay and, you know, the design was great. The storytelling was great and it all sort of came together. All my other actors I worked with were all like top of their game. It was a dream come true. It was hard because it took 3 years and A, I couldn't really tell anybody that I was Spider-Man. I mean, I would tell my kid, but, you know, he's so young that he couldn't like spill the beans.
Yeah.
And now I think he thinks maybe his dad actually is Spider-Man. Yeah, there's no. Yeah, it's kind of cool because he doesn't get acting yet. So he's like, wow, I think my dad is actually Spider-Man. And also because it's such a sacred cow, I was worried I was going to mess it up. To be totally honest, I thought I was going to ruin Spider-Man because he's such a beloved character, not just by me, but by a lot of people. I hope that there's more. There's got to be more.
Yeah.
They haven't like called me up and said, or you know, here's a report to duty for the next game yet. But I can only imagine that with the success of the first one, there's going to be a second one
right.
because people like companies like money. I don't know if it has opened any doors yet. It's still soon. To say that,
yeah.
But I have noticed the jobs that I have been on since then, people want to talk about Spider-Man. And I showed up on one job, and I was in the room where we get all our mocap suits on and everything, and they had a little whiteboard with all the actors that were on set that day. And it's, you know, name, and then the time, their call time, and everything. And next to my name, somebody had drawn, like, a crude, like, Spider-Man mask. And I didn't know anybody there. Like it wasn't like, hey, because we know each other.
Right.
Like, it was, like, stuff like that has started to happen. And I'm so proud of how it turned out. And I personally think it's some of the best work I've ever done. And that comes from, you know, working with a team that clearly loves the property and are clearly Spider-Man nerds themselves. And them taking the time with it. I mean, I'm glad that it had the backing of Sony. I'm glad that they had the money to take the time with it, because not all games have that budget.
Right.
So I was very privileged and proud to be a part of that one, for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Hi, I'm Max from Game Press.
Hey, Max.
Great, so I wanted to ask, you know, Marth is like a really beloved character,
mm-hmm.
So I was wondering about the process to becoming voice of Marth.
It was an interesting sort of backdoor story with Marth, because I wasn't as familiar with the character, but there was Steam. It was Agents of Steam or something of Steam. Is it S?
Codename
Steam. Thank you. Codename Steam. They asked me to come in to do a few lines for this little character named Marth. And then afterwards, I found out that he had never been dubbed before. It was Marth's voice was always in Japanese, even in the English release of it. And I thought it was just going to be a one-off thing for that game. And then they came back to me when they wanted to do it for Smash and for Fire Emblem, and then that's when I got really nervous, because when you don't know how big a character is, and you're like, oh, this is just a character I'm doing. But when you like back when we started for Naruto, you know, a million years ago. Can you believe we're still working on that show 13 years later? Boruto now, but we just finished the dub for Naruto. I went online to do a little research before going in, because the audition process was a little more stringent than other shows I had worked on. I'm like, I wonder what this is all about. And that's when I got really nervous. I'm like, and especially when I got the part, and everybody online was, you know, I mean, you know, everybody's ready to, you know, something they love so much, if, when you're about to change it or you're about to, you know, put your stink on it, everybody's like, they're going to get it wrong. I know they're going to get it wrong. I mean, I'm that way. So I get it. I got really nervous, much like with Spider-Man. Same with Sasuke. I was worried I was going to mess it up. And I'm glad that it has been generally well received. And I found that with Marth as well. And I'm very happy about that. I'm very proud of that. I you know, there's a lot of me in Marth, and maybe that's what convinced them that I was the guy for that. Yeah, I hope I get to play Marth a lot, like forever. Yeah, thank you.
Since you mentioned Naruto, yeah. Nice segue for that. Also, you can give me those Rave Master. That was one of my favorite shows back when.
Yeah.
You can just give me those. And
we don't even have to talk. Like, and you can leak them, and then it's not even on me. Except you have me on video now saying that I was going to give you those tapes. So, yeah.
You can blur that up.
Yeah. Okay.
With Naruto, yeah. Like you said, you've been doing it now for 13 plus or something.
Yeah. Is it more? It's probably more.
It'll be more with Boruto too.
Yeah.
Did you think that you would be part of such iconic show with that, because when you think of Toonami, after Dragon Ball, Naruto is probably the next thing people come up with, and you being the major character of Sasuke.
Yeah.
I'm curious in your thoughts of not only playing him as a young kid, but getting to grow to now where he's a father.
Yeah.
And all that kind of thing.
Yeah. At about the same time that I became a father, which is a weird coincidence, weird serendipity. But, no, I mean, obviously, I hope that everything that I work on is wildly successful, but you never know. Because some of my favorite stuff that I've worked on, you know, it can fizzle, you know, and or it doesn't get released, like I mentioned before, or, you know, it gets released and it's the wrong time, or people hate it, or whatever it is. You know, you never know. So, no, I certainly didn't know at the beginning. It soon became apparent after, you know, we started releasing those episodes that people liked it and it was probably going to go on. But I had no idea there was like 700 some odd episodes of it. And then Boruto coming around. I mean, again, like I mentioned before, you know, companies like money, and if things are making money, they'll keep making that stuff. But I had no idea. And you, as an actor, you rarely get, I mean, sometimes you only get a season of something. Sometimes you only get a few episodes of something. If you're lucky, you get 3 seasons of something. Getting to live with a character and grow with a character over that amount of time is a gift I don't know that I'll be able to replicate with any other project. I don't know what other project would do that. Like, I thought Ben 10 was cool because I got to do it for like 7 years, you know, and they grew the character and then they sort of grew the character back. But, you know, it's backwards. But anyway, whatever keeps making you money, Cartoon Network. So getting to grow with Sasuke has been a gift. And we'll see how long we can keep doing it. I don't know. I sound mostly the same. We'll see. I mean, if you're, you know, when we're old men in here in 20 years, and we're still talking about Naruto, remind me that we had this conversation, because I'm sure I will have forgotten.
No problem.
Are there any new releases you're looking forward to that you've done?
Yes. Some of them I can't talk about. I know, and that always seems like such a cop out, and it's like a terrible thing to say. But they've got us running scared with non-disclosure agreements, and they make you sign your life away and promise never to talk about it. And I've seen what's happened to the people who've broken those. You don't know who I'm talking about, right? Because they've been erased. I'm trying to think of things that I can talk about. I probably should have prepared something like, so what are you working on now? Let me possibly get back to that.
You can talk about, you've already done like a recently week.
Yeah, I mean, getting to come back to Code Geass for this latest Code Geass film was another one of those miracles. I didn't think we would ever get to do any more of that. And they made more, and they asked me to come back, which is always a surprise and a welcome one. So stuff like that, getting to come back to Young Justice, I still haven't seen those new episodes because I don't have the new DC Universe subscription service, but I hear it's great. other stuff that's... I've mostly been guesting on, like, other people's shows. I did a thing that I was super proud of last year. It's some of the proudest I've been of any of the work that I've ever done. And I would love to tell you about it because it had a limited... It was on Project Alpha, which was Legendary's subscription sort of Twitch channel. And which has now been shuttered. So, but I think you can find the episodes on Geek & Sundry. It was a show called Orbital Redux. And it was a show that... it was a live sci-fi show. A live-action sci-fi show that I also helped produce. That was unlike anything I had ever done. It was live science fiction. So it was performed live like a play. All the special effects, each episode was... When you guys were watching it, when the audience was watching it, it was literally happening right then. And we couldn't call cut. So we did a lot of rehearsal. The special effects were all done live. The music was performed live by a band in the studio while we were doing it. All the editing, all the cuts were happening live. There were like 10 cameras. 5 were like manned and they were moving around, and then some of them were fixed cameras. And it was some of the most exciting work I had ever done because it was like doing theater again. It was like doing a play where once you can step on stage and the play starts, you got to just keep going. And things always go wrong. So I'm not saying every episode was perfect. We messed up in every episode, but hopefully nobody knew but us. And I would love to... I'd never taken part in a show like that or seen a show like that. And I would love to do more of that. And I would hope that there are more opportunities. I mean, I guess, people, with they want more choose your own adventure stuff. They want interactive stuff. Oh, that was something I forgot to mention. The audience could vote on various plot elements during the show or at the beginning of the show. So we had to have different paths prepared for certain parts of the... I mean, it was still basic. It wasn't going to change the whole story. It wasn't going to send us spiraling off. But we had to prepare many scenarios. And so it was nerve-wracking. But some of the stuff that we achieved live, I didn't think could be done. And I urge you to go watch Orbital Redux on Geek & Sundry. I think somebody said they just watched it. Well, somebody just tweeted it yesterday that they watched it all on Geek & Sundry. I'm not privy to their scheduling, so I don't know where the episodes are available now. And obviously, we're not performing them live, but we did 8 episodes. Each one was about 15, 20 minutes long. And I would love for you to watch it.
You mentioned Code Geass. Suzaku prides himself on fighting for what's right. What moment in Code Geass do you think most exemplifies this?
That is absolutely 100% right. He always believes he's fighting for what's right, and that's what makes it complicated, because he's working off of so many different relationships and so much different information. Sometimes, even though he's doing what he thinks is right, it could hurt a lot of people. But I would say one of my happiest, saddest moments of that show was when he makes the decision to lie to Yuffie. I don't know how well you know the show, but yeah. She is, yeah, but I figure, spoilers are long dead at this point for the... She is on her deathbed, and she has just done horrible things. Not because she wanted to, but she perpetrated horrible things, and people died. And she asked, like, if everything was okay, and he lies to her. And said that, so that she could die with a clear conscience. And I found that beautiful. And they also didn't tell me that was, whether or not it was, on the director's part, we're doing this. I think it was just, they didn't have time to really let us know where the series was going to go. And I remember, and they don't send us scripts in advance, usually, because they're working them to the last minute, and they don't want them to be leaked and whatever. I remember spontaneously crying. I wasn't prepared for that level from him. And while he there are many missteps, he also has anger management problems. in that moment to lie to her because there was no point in telling her the truth in that moment. I find that beautiful. I always go back to that as a touchstone for that character and for the show. For me, it's not all mech battles. You know, I mean, as much as I love watching mech battles. Thanks for asking that question.
So one of my favorite video game series is Saints Row.
Me too.
Where you play the character of Matt Miller, the hacker with quite the god complex.
Yeah.
When voicing this character, what were you personally able to bring to the table that helped the shape Miller into that Nightblade obsessed ninja?
Matt is a weird one, but I love my history with the Saints Row franchise. I've worked on every game, but it wasn't until 3 that they introduced Matt Miller and a character that people, you know, that was a saint, or became a saint. Anyway, he was a Decker and who became a saint. But I don't think I have a god complex, and I'm actually abysmal with computers these days. I used to be on my game, and they've evolved beyond me. I think what I brought, or at least what I keyed into, what I really loved about that character was that, yeah, on one level, he has a god complex and thinks that he is the best at what he does. And he is very skilled at what he does. But he is also obsessed with this, you know, Nightblade character and the fan fiction, to the point where he's writing, you know, fan fiction about the character. And that was, I mean, the Nightblade moments and the Nightblade lines were always my favorite, because that's where he gets really vulnerable. He's like, I am a god! You know, but you know, he obsesses over this fictional character that is, you know, a combination of... you know, Blade and Twilight, and you know, all of the things that we love, and I loved that about him. He was at once extremely powerful and very vulnerable, and I'll segue briefly, but it's not really a segue. That one of my proudest things about the Spider-Man game is that Peter Parker and Spider-Man shows a lot of vulnerability, and I mean it's one of the reasons that people I think love that character. Is he's not superhuman. He deals with the same kind of things that we all deal with, and the number of people who probably would normally, you know, suck it up and not own up to it would tweet out, hey, I was in tears at the end of Spider-Man, and I think that's really important. I think vulnerability has gotten the short shrift in society these days, and you got to be strong, you got to be, you know, you don't want to be a snowflake or, you know, whatever it is. And I think in vulnerability lies our greatest strength as people. And I think we need to remind people of that. We need to remember that. We need to find that in ourselves. And so when I find characters that show vulnerability, whether it's, you know, Peter Parker or whether it's Matt Miller, I love that. And it makes the character stronger, and I think it makes us as people stronger. So I know I went deep on that question, but I believe that's true. So,
yeah. Through your career, you've become known as one of those voices of a generation, so to speak, with roles like, say, Sasuke, Suzaku, Gurren Lagann, Simone, and now Spider-Man under your belt. How does it feel to know that your voice basically has helped some fans and guide them pretty much through their entire lives, both as fans and sometimes in a literal sense?
Yeah. Old. It makes me feel old. that is in part the witty answer to your question. It's always funny when somebody's like, "Man, you were my whole childhood," and they're like, "I'm like, but you're like an adult." So that means, wait a minute, hold on, let me do the math. So if I was, it's my greatest honor. I've only recently become a father, so you know now I feel a responsibility to teach my son how to be a good human being, and it is only then that I realize that because of the characters, you know, a combination of the characters that I've played and the person that I am, I've had the opportunity to teach and lead even when I don't know that I'm doing it, and that's why I think storytelling is important and powerful. And often gets sort of, you know, pushed aside as, you know, frivolous entertainment, but I think we absolutely need it, and it's where we learn lessons, and it's where we see people fail and get back up again, and it gives people strength. Sometimes even when I don't know that it's giving people strength, and that's a communal thing. That's, you know, I take part in that. the writer who writes those characters and those stories takes part in that, you know, the producer takes part in that, and then the person who's taking that entertainment in, who's listening to that story, the person who's viewing it or listening to it or watching it, they take the greatest responsibility of all in that. Because people have come up to me and said, you helped me during a really dark time. And I try to, and this, I'll give credit to Bernie Burns from Rooster Teeth. He first said this, and he'd been the first person to say it in a way that made sense to me. But I didn't do anything. You did the hard part. You know, if you were going through dark times and the story affected you and gave you strength, it was still your strength to stand back up again or to fight, you know, against the darkness or to, you know, change or whatever it was that brought, you know, that brought you to. So I love that stories can inspire and characters can inspire, and it helps me keep doing this because, you know, there are days when I'm like, shouldn't I be building hospitals in Africa? I mean, what am I doing? I mean, how is this helping the world? And because I believe that stories are important, and because of the, you know, people who say that things like this have helped them or inspired them, I can wake up every morning, you know, and keep doing it. So it's a very proud part of my life and an honor that I, when people say that, it does make me feel old, but more importantly, it makes me feel that what I do has value, and that what I do helps. I'll never not feel grateful for that. I think never not. That means I'll feel grateful. Yes. Okay. Good. I had to sort out the math on that one just to make sure I was saying what I wanted to say. But yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Not sure how old is your son?
He'll be 3 in June.
3. Okay.
Yeah.
So he hasn't totally started getting into the TV and movies.
No. And as an old school nerd, I there's all this stuff that I want to push on him, and I'm like, when is it too soon to show him Buckaroo Banzai? Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a? I know. That's probably like 7.
8. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
I just wanted to see if you had a list of stuff you were excited to show him. Does that include your stuff? Or?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know when he's gonna. You know, it's funny. I have this really sort of dark thought of, oh my God, if I died today, and I couldn't tell him all those things, would he go on a quest to watch all the cartoons that I've done and play all the video games and sort of be able to talk to his dad or get the lessons that way? So that's sick, right? That's twisted.
Oh, yeah, it's
but I've often thought of writing that still. That'd be a kind of cool movie, wouldn't it? Anyway, I have a long list of stuff that I loved, and then of course all the stuff that I recently started letting him watch because he doesn't watch a lot of stuff. We limit his screen time, but Space Racers was a space science show that I worked on for a couple of years, and he's into space. And among, you know, other things like dinosaurs and construction equipment, because that's age 3, I guess. So we started watching that, and all he's got a couple of Space Racer toys that are of my character. So he'll watch it, and he'll hear me, and then I'll do the voice of the kid, because I do voices for all his toys.
Right.
But this one is exactly, you know, I don't know if he's making that connection yet. I don't know exactly how to. I think I'm going to let him. I have been told that if you force them too much into it to like a thing, then they rebel against it. And so I'm trying not to push too hard because I want him to like the things that I like. But I've got to have a gentle hand. I've got a long list of stuff, and they're mostly things just that I loved, growing up, and then I love now. Here's a bunch of stuff that I did. Yeah. Although, yeah, I would love for him to play Spider-Man, but he's not going to play Spider-Man for years.
Yeah, years.
And hopefully we'll have a Spider-Man 2. Or hopefully we'll be on Spider-Man 5 by the time he's... But yeah, I've got a huge nerdy list, and mostly what I do is I let him sort of come to my office every now and then, and he's sort of exposed. He sees the, you know, all my action figures and stuff like that, and he sees all the weird books that I have on my shelf. So I'm hoping that, much like me when I was a kid, you know, I'll see something, not get told about it, and then just start spinning off in my imagination. I'm like, I wonder what that is.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents, you know, let me watch public television when I was younger because that seemed like the safe thing. But you got to remember, I mean, public television were like the first, you know, PBS was like the first station to like to broadcast Monty Python.
Yeah.
You know, so I was, you know, so I was way too young to be watching Monty Python at that age. But it also made me, you know, that and like playing D&D made me who I am today. So I can't wait to. I can't wait to corrupt him, I guess. Is the right idea. Yeah. Yeah.
Seems like there's, or are you care to say about some of your formative experiences or a lot of your influences on your work? Or like?
Yeah, yeah. That's a great thank you, because I grew up reading a lot of fantasy and science fiction and genre literature. And if you can call, you know, a lot of that stuff literature, a lot of it's, you know, pulp nonsense. But I grew up reading a lot, and I just said it, but I'll say it again and dig a little deeper. I believe that I am a well-read, well-traveled, generally educated person who can deal with different relationships because I played Dungeons & Dragons growing up. Like I can trace it all back to that. That, you know, watching cartoons and reading books and made me the person that I am today. And anybody who trivializes that doesn't get it. You know, I mean, everybody has a different path, but that was mine. I didn't know that I was, you know, some people know that, oh, I'm going to be an actor when I grow up. I didn't know that for a very long time, but even when I was growing up, I was doing the stuff that would then make me into an actor. I was, you know, making stupid little radio shows with my cassette player. I was recording, you know, all the different voices, and I was drawing the, you know, the comic books for it. And you know, I just loved stories and storytelling. I just recently on eBay. Bought because my son doesn't have a lot of screen time. I'm trying to think, you know, of other things that he could, like, there are only so many ways you can explore certain characters without watching the movies or the cartoons or whatever. And I used to listen to Power Records.
Yes.
Power Records were like Captain America and Spider-Man and the Hulk and Fantastic Four and all these different sort of stories, Captain Marvel, and but it was all on a record. And I have a turntable at home now, and I've started buying old Power Records and playing them for my son. And sometimes he keys in, and sometimes he doesn't, because there's no immediate visual, you know, connection for that. But that was, you know, in a way that was an intro to me for voice acting, I guess. You know, growing up with those types of stories, you know, old radio shows. While I'm not quite as old as to have, you know, listened to old radio shows before TV, I found them later in life on cassette, and would listen to old radio shows. I saw a lot of movies growing up. I could talk about how, because I was alive to see Star Wars in the theater, New Hope, and I could talk about how that film guided me and affected me, but it goes even just before that. Like, even just seeing the commercial, the TV commercial for that movie blew my mind apart. When I remember seeing that commercial and going, whatever that is, I've never seen it before, and I want it all the time, you know? And so then, of course, I saw the movie over and over and over again. And it really, yeah, like I said, storytelling is important, and stories were always a big part of my childhood. And I'm glad that's what I get to do for my life now. So that was my path, and then my path into the professional part was, I didn't, like I said, I didn't know for a long time. I denied it for a long time. I thought, like, oh, I'll go into foreign, you know, international relations or whatever, like my dad, or, you know, you can't. I mean, acting's not a real job that people can do, right? And so I didn't even. I was doing other stuff. Like, I was playing D&D, and I was collecting comics, and I was doing sports and stuff in school. And I always thought, I'd love to try out for a play sometime, even though I'd never done any of that before. But I kept putting it off. And then my senior year of high school, I thought, if I'm going to try it, I'm about to go off to college. I'm probably not going to start it in college. If I really want to try it, I should probably do it now. And I did, and I fell in love with it. And I I kept it in the background for a while, and then after doing 2 years of international relations work, basically, I said, you know what, the government job will be here. I have to go. Like, all my spare time was spent doing plays and making stupid movies with my friends, you know, and with increasingly, you know, better digital cameras, and studying with Japanese theater troops, and like that's what I spent most of my time doing. And then I would go to my day job, and then I'd spend all my time doing that other stuff. And I thought, I don't want to look back in 30 years and at least not have tried to see if I could make that my living. And I moved to New York. And spent 6 years doing, you know, basement theater, and then moved out to L.A., got married along the way, in Vegas to my wife, and we've been out in L.A. ever since, and I haven't looked back, and every now and then I have these panic moments of, what if this career went away, you know, what if this job, what would I do? I've always said I could go back to the government work, but I don't know that I could at this point. I don't know. Those are panic moments, because it's, nobody gives you this career and then says, and now you've got it. You don't have to work at it anymore. So I know it could go away at any time. And, you know, me and Tara work really hard to keep it up. But I don't know what else I would do at this point. So that was my path. And you talk to people in the entertainment industry, and that's one of the exciting things. Everybody's got a different path. Everybody got there a slightly different way. There are some commonalities to people's stories. So this helped them or this worked. But everybody's got their own path. That was the partial telling of mine.
Since you mentioned that you like getting called into new anime projects, whether it be like a few episodes here or there, what did you feel about getting to be a part of Fooly Cooly, the original sequel series that Adult Swim got to go on to make and all that stuff?
That was super exciting because, again, I never thought, like, I thought that ship had sailed. And that, you know, like, I was like, Kari, you got to work on, you know, Fooly Cooly, how cool is that? And so getting to come in, that was one I will be honest. I said yes because it was Fooly Cooly. Like, it wasn't just because they said, "Hey, would you like to come in and audition for this thing?" I was like, "Yes, I will audition for it. I just want to let you know how cool, you know, a project I think this is, and please let me get this." So yeah, I mean, I still had to audition for it. But yeah, certain shows definitely hold a. I got to do a. Yeah, I grew up. Robotech was huge for me growing up. I used to like sometimes. Cut the end of, you know, my day of school so I could run home and catch the opening credits of Robotech because it had also the greatest music. But that was done by the time I got into this business. So when they did the Shadow Chronicles movie and I got, you know, I got to be in that, that was a huge... So any of those, yeah, so Fooly Cooly, big red letter day for that.
Which position do you think is most important in the dubbing process? And director is...
Writers. I think the writers are key in that because they have really hard work. They're taking the translation because the writers usually not the translators. They get sort of a raw translation that sounds not like how people would really talk, and then they have to make that into not only something that sounds natural, but something that also conveys the original emotion of the original performance. And also fits the lip flap. And once upon a time, writers cared less about that. Now they care very much. To the point where sometimes you'll notice that dub lip flap is better than Japanese lip flap. Because for whatever reason, we've zeroed in on that. It's less important, it seems, to the original. And very important to us. And we also record differently than you know the Japanese original is recorded. I'm jealous that they sometimes get to record... As a cast, which is something we never get to do. So I would go with writer on that.
Which character that you've portrayed would you most like to give life advice to?
Sasuke. Man, I would have told Sasuke a long time ago, look, you just gotta find love, you gotta let this whole revenge thing go, it is gonna burn you up. I don't know that he would have listened to me. I mean, he didn't listen to any of his other friends, clearly, but that would be the one, yeah, he would be at top of my list for life advice. And again, like I said, I don't like to give advice, but that dude needs all the advice. Because it hasn't helped him as a dad, if anybody's been watching Boruto. He's not a good dad. So, yeah.
Right. So... Question I like to ask voice actors. If you find yourself stuck on a deserted island, which three characters that you have portrayed in the past would you like to have with you to keep you sane until your imminent rescue, and why?
Oh, man. That's a good one. How about Yosuke from Persona, because he would make me laugh. Superman from Legion of Superheroes, because he would make me feel safe the whole time we were there. And Simone from Gurren Lagann, because he would inspire me, and he also might be able to drill us out. Like, we might even not have to wait for the rescue. We might be able to drill under the sea into another place where we could escape.
Good
answer. So, thank you. Thank you.
Yes. I have a question I like to ask all voice actors. What would be the strangest or most interesting thing to ever happen to you in a booth?
It's a funny place, working in a room like that, with nobody else sort of around. I mean, you feel like you're at the zoo in a way, because usually the director and the producer, you know, and the engineer are all on the other side of the glass. So funny things happen in there. There's a lot of stuff that never sees the light of day, outtakes and stuff like that I would love to share with you guys, but they burn it as soon as we do it, because it's either foul or filthy or has nothing to do with anything. So it's a very odd place to start with. And I'm glad there's not a mirror in there, because if I actually saw what I looked like when I worked, I'm sure I would become self-conscious and I would quit. I did, slightly embarrassing story, because you're in there alone, and you just count on being there alone for long stretches of time, there's just certain bodily functions, habits, depending on what you ate, the day before or that morning, and if you know you're going to be in there by yourself, it's really no big deal. And so sometimes you just relax a little bit, to put it bluntly. That's actually not very blunt. Sometimes you fart in the booth. That's to put it bluntly. And I was in there at the beginning of a session. I knew I was going to be in there for hours. I'm like, it's just me. No big deal. And I let one rip. And seconds after, the director says, hey, we've got an actor who's just come in. They just need to pick up one line. Could you, they're going to come in and do it right now. And I was like, it was one of those slow motion moments. You were like, no. And they opened the door, and it was the studio. The guy who owned the studio, it was his daughter. The young daughter had just come in to do this one thing. Like, it was just sort of like a favor to, she didn't say anything, but I could tell by the look on her face exactly what was going through her head when they opened the door. Like, if I had had the presence of mind and the speed, I would have just held onto the door and just not let them open. Just let the ventilation take care of it. Just hold on. So you get used to working by yourself, and every now and then you get thrown a curveball. It's a weird place. It's a weird place we work.
If you could just talk just briefly about it, you said you like to read comics when you're younger. Mm-hmm. Just a few first issues or first, whatever that kind of grabbed you.
Yeah, I liked a lot of the main, characters. I was big. As a matter of fact, when I was really young, I loved Captain America and Batman, because when you're young, you don't care whether it's DC or Marvel. It's whatever you like is what you like. And my mom was really good at making costumes, or at least she cared, enough to. And she knew enough to cut and sew, and she made me a Batman costume, and a Captain America costume. And when I couldn't decide, I would put half of one costume on, half and dress as Captain Bat, which was a character that I invented because I loved them both so much, I crammed them together. So Captain America and Batman were big when I was younger. When I got older, like in the mid to late 80s, I was a big Moon Knight fan. To this day, I think Moon Knight has not gotten his due, and he will someday, because he's basically Marvel's Batman, only weirder, if that's possible. Big Moon Knight guy. I loved weird sort of side characters like Damon Hellstrom, and like the Black Knight, like all, you know, weird, like not sort of leading, you know, they didn't have their own titles usually, but they would have like a one-off or something like that. I loved running around being those, you know, still at the age where you could play those characters with your friends. Yeah. I mean, your friends were the only people who know, you know, other friends, you know, who read comics were the only people who knew who those characters were. Moon Knight was a big deal for me. And then in the late 80s, when they started getting a lot of independent runs, like short runs of like comic books from independent presses, I was collecting all sorts of weird comics. But yeah, there's yes, and one more.
Oh, so like just in general, what kind of anime or series would you like to see more entries in or come to the U.S.?
I have not been following up to date anime as much as I used to. Reboot of anything. Rave Master, clearly. I used to love the weird twisted stuff that attracted me to anime in the first place. I would love to see Supernatural Beast City, which was sometimes called Wicked City. I would love to see. I love supernatural stories impinging on, you know, like real life. I love detective stories that have supernatural elements. And that was a no holds barred. Like if you haven't seen it and you can see it, you should see it. I think it's the same people who did like Ninja Scroll, and like it was weird and, you know, super effed up. So I would love to see Supernatural Beast City come back for any sort of, even just like an OVA or just like a one off, like another movie with where technology has come now. What else? That would be at the top of my list because I loved it so much. For Netflix watchers, if you haven't seen Love, Death, and Robots, it's like an old heavy metal, you know, like Cumbia or like Animatrix, you know, it's sort of like a birth of like that, and I got to work on one of those, and it was a super proud moment of mine. If you saw Fish Night, I was the young guy in Fish Night. I would love to see anthology animation come back. Shorts, lots of, you know, studios doing these shorts and putting together and making a big event thing, like once a year, like we know that at Christmas we can expect another Love, Death, and Robots or whatever. I would love for that, and for, you know, for all, you know, different studios to be involved. You know, studios from Japan, studios from Korea, studios from, you know, the States and France. And France is doing some amazing animation stuff. There's a studio over there that is, I can't talk about a thing, but it's a thing. And when you see it, it's going to blow your mind. So, thank you. Thank you all. That was fun to watch that. Yeah. And now all these.